So, welcome to our session this afternoon. Ruby Adams, and doing this is our last session of ministering to immigrants and refugees. And today we're talking about finding your way, or if you want to say finding our way. For the last few days, we covered topics such as immigration in Canada, which is the early history of immigration and immigration today. Then we also talked about immigrants and refugees, who are they, the myths and the facts about the two categories of people, immigrating to Canada, which we covered the processes of sponsorship. And yesterday we did ministering to newcomers, about the settlement needs and challenges that they face. And today we're continuing on ministering to newcomers, finding our way, or in other words, as a church, as a community, how can we move on from here in ministering to newcomers in our community. So yesterday we covered where are we, why should we get involved? Today, what could we do and how can we learn from one another? Okay. So where are we? On the screen they have a circle. God is in the middle, and lets the what we call spokes, like in the wheel, represent the lives that people live. And those are people, the lives they live, focusing on God. The closer we get to God, is the closer we get to others. And the way we approach God is the way we would approach and deal with people. As you would see, there's a quote here. And this quote is from a Christian monk from the 6th century, Dorotheus of Gaza. And she said, "Imagine that the world is a circle, that God is the center, and that the radial lines, like spokes, are people's different ways of life. When those who wish to come closer to God walk towards the center of the circle, they come closer to one another at the same time as they approach God. The closer they come to God, the closer they come to one another. And the closer they come to one another, the closer they come to God." I'm sure we'll relate to that, and that would really give us a picture of that circle, the representation of that circle. But before we go further, I'd like to offer a word of prayer. Father, we want to thank you for the sunshine that is peeking out of the clouds. You give us warmth in our heart and warmth in body. And you know we need a rain and a sunshine, and we thank you for both. And we thank you for those who are here this afternoon, and pray that as we conclude this seminar with ways in which we can reach out to newcomers in our communities, that you will give us vision and inspire us to with courage to move forward, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. There's another quote here. "If we believe that all people bear God's image, then how we relate to and approach one another is an expression of how we relate to and approach God." Right? And that's the quote from "The Role of Churches in Immigrant Settlement and Integration." That's the project that is being put in place, that I was able to get a lot of this material, because I was searching for ways in which other churches are doing ministry with immigrants and refugees. And when I came up on that, it's like exactly what I wanted. And so they're saying, if we believe that all people bear God's image, then the way we relate to and approach one another is the way, the same thing we would do with God, right? Because we're born in His image. Very good quote. So community and church transformation. What is your church like? These are questions I want us to reflect on. What is your church like? And they're not talking about the building, because a lot of us have beautiful church buildings. But the church as we know it, the people are the church. And so is your church made up of immigrants, refugees, of Canadian born only, or a mixture of both? So anyone wants to say, what is your congregation like?
Our congregation is made of a mixture of both.
Mixture of both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You the same?
Yeah.
Mixture of both?
Ours is a mixture of both with a migrant tending now to surpass the number of the Canadian born.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, I don't know of our church how much mixture. It's a mixture of cultures.
Yes.
And with the students that come from all over the world.
All over the world, yeah. So, it's quite a mixture. Exactly.
Probably immigrants, I don't know about refugees.
Yeah.
Students that are
right.
Refugees, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, it's a mixture. Do you think immigration trends will continue? Right now, there is a trend with a lot of immigration coming in. Do you think that will continue in Canada? Or do you think at some point it's going to stop?
I think it will be an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
Immigration will not stop all over the world.
All over the world. It's not just Canada.
In the case of Canada, actually, we tend to have more immigrants moving in.
Yes.
Because if we just go by the children that are being born here, there's no way we can cope with
right.
the demand of the economy.
Right.
We
because
fall off the scale.
Together. Right. As they say, most people have 1.5 children, right? And that won't work.
You know, I've always wondered why the population of Canada never
is so small. Yeah.
You see, despite of the fact that so many immigrants are coming here every year,
we still way underpopulated.
Yeah. I'm
yeah.
Like, what is happening in Canada?
Yeah. No, because.
My supposition, it might be that because we are more northern, you know, people gravitate to warmer countries, for instance, like the United States, you know, which is just south of us, right? And we are just sitting on top of the United States.
Yeah.
And United States is what, 260 million?
Yes.
Or nearly 400 million.
Right.
You know, right. As people go farther north,
right,
you will find that, you know, the population become a little less.
Right.
That's what I think.
And I think, too, with the low people not having lots of children, it's economics as well. In the sense that, okay, more mothers are out going out to work now.
Mm-hmm.
It takes two persons in a household to really, the income of two people to really keep things intact. So people can't really afford to have like 6 and 8, and like I'm from a family of 12. Mm-hmm. Just tell me where in the world in this day and age. Right.
We couldn't do the same thing.
Right. So we couldn't do that in this day, because if the wife or mother is going out to work and the dad is going out to work, who can afford childcare? So childcare is a big thing. For a lot of immigrants coming from countries where the extended family, grandma is there, uncle, auntie, even the neighbor would say, if you have to go to the market, leave the children with me. They would take care. But you can't really do that here unless you have a very, very good friend who would say, just leave them here and, you know, whatever. So everything is money. It's money. If you have how much for child care now for one child, just imagine if you have multiple children. So I think that has kept the population, Canadian population, low. So immigrants would have to make up, and they would help with, they're contributing to the taxes and everything like that. So, but to help keep the population growth. We want to maintain a high standard of living, and but then it becomes very weighty on such a small population, for Canada being the second largest country in the world, right? What does it mean to be a faithful church within our rapidly changing communities? So we know our communities are changing rapidly. Diversity, increase in diversity in our population. So does that mean then that we can't be faithful church members anymore? So what does it mean to be a faithful church within our rapidly changing communities?
I think we need to have our presence within the community that we serve, right?
Yes.
Like we were talking about, if possible, we can convince our members to sign up to volunteer in this settlement center, because those kind of places receive a lot of people that are new coming in this country. Mm-hmm. So if you volunteer in those kind of places, you make friends there. And out of that friendship now, the church can now come in to meet their need. Because if you find two or three people that are in need of something, and you know that your church could provide that, then you become a link. So I think that way we can tap into immigration service, and really many of our churches will be full if we are all active.
Yes, we need to be visible.
Yeah.
Yes.
To have that exposure.
Yes.
Just in my community, I can bring as an example.
Yeah.
We have had in the last maybe 4 years, close to 2,000 Nepalese.
Yeah.
Mm. This is a small community. We are a community of 75,000. So if you are talking about 2,000 coming in in a span of a year or two.
Yeah.
That's a significant number. Yeah.
But our church, since we were not part, we're not included in that, we haven't had a single one of those coming to our church.
Yeah.
We do understand that they have the religious background, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But there are some other churches where they have one or two of those people.
Yeah.
Like, that was a crucial point there. At the point of entry, there was no contact, no exposure. So we are meeting them now in our workplaces. If you happen to have members of the church in those particular workplaces, like most of them are in the meat packaging business in our area there. So it will be now a different aspect to kind of try to reach those people.
Yes.
So I think that was an opportunity.
And networking is so important, because if you want to, you don't have to do everything by yourself or alone or invent the wheel. So if there is an immigrant serving agency in your community, they provide certain services, but as session yesterday, they can't reach everyone, and not everyone would come to them or even maybe know they exist. So if you can find a way of connecting with an immigrant serving agency, first get like your program in place, like some plan of how are you going to minister, and then pass that information on, maybe in the form of just a flyer to immigrant serving agencies. And they would put it up on their bulletin boards, and you know that's a place that's going to be frequented by newcomers or immigrants, and they can know, oh, so that church
yeah.
offers such and such and such.
Yeah.
See? Yes. They would put your stuff up on their bulletin boards for free. I know we do that.
Yeah.
So we have different community things that they know. This is where immigrants would frequent. They come for different services, and they would eventually look at the board.
Yeah.
So that's one way. So you can be a faithful your church in your community.
For example,
mm-hmm.
what if a few churches unite, for example? Which area are you coming from?
Lethbridge.
And you just have one church in that area, maybe?
We have only one church.
Okay. So areas like Edmonton or Red Deer, where you have a large number of membership, I've been thinking about why is it we cannot organize a babysitting program? Maybe three churches come together and we'll put up a babysitting program for free
mm-hmm.
to this community.
Okay.
Because many of them will be busy looking for jobs and they cannot afford
and they can't afford childcare
to pay.
Yeah.
And you know, that's something that we can do. If three churches come together, couldn't we find people that can volunteer even for 2 hours each? Like
so,
somebody volunteer from 7 to 9, something.
Yeah.
You know, a few people like that, and until 4 or 5 when parents come take their children, I think that can have a huge impact.
So that's a good idea. I think the only hurdle that you'd have to cross or jump over is the regulations, government regulations. Because if you're going to be doing like a child minding, it's not like a daycare, but you're doing child minding, they won't call it babysitting, then the people in that group that should be trained with CPR to be able to do resuscitation. So there are regulations. You can't just, as a group, say, okay, we offer this on a regular basis.
Also, those regulations, training may not take so many days.
Also, now the government, if you're looking after children, you have to clear
security check.
We do that
yes.
all the time even with those that are working with children or judges in church.
Right.
They do. So that's not the problem.
Like if you're having an evangelistic series, I mean, that's a different thing. Where you have folk who, but if you want to like establish a regular child minding thing, you have to check out the government regulations with that. Yeah. Security clearance.
Yeah. Things that are doable. I mean, if
yeah.
we want to establish our presence in the community, those things are doable.
And they are. I mean, that's a very good one.
Yeah.
It's a very high need for people. Someone had a question.
That would be very impactful. If we did that, we would definitely result for right away.
Right. You have to put a plan in place. Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
I think with the babysitting, if it's one-on-one, like I tell you I'll watch a kid for the afternoon or whatever, it's not as vital, even though it would be great to have all those things. But I tell you, if you have more than one, or you're going to establish some kind of a place you're going to babysit,
mm-hmm.
it'll take you months to get that set up.
Yes.
These long lists of regulations.
Regulations.
And you know,
yeah.
how many diapers you have to have on
hand. Yeah. The equipment, they have to be not outdated stuff for you to use. It's a whole lot, even the toys that you're using have to be like given clearance for safety. So there's a lot of things you have to have in place if you're going to establish something like that.
That's a very worth investment to
yep.
invest our energy there.
Yep.
Because you find, sometimes I speak with Pastor Ali, and every year the conference gives so much money for evangelism, for example. But would you believe that maybe a church is given $15,000 to spend on evangelism? And you hear the report, maybe one or two people were baptized, right? But then you're thinking like $15,000 and then we only have one or two people. I'm not saying that...
they're not valuable.
They're not valuable. But I'm saying, if we invest that $15,000 on something different,
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the method we are using for evangelism does not attract many of these people in our community.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we are not touching their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So why not invest this money in some kind of program that touches the lives of these people? And once they are, these people care.
The needs are met.
The needs are met.
Yeah.
Then it's easy for you to convince them to come and...
It's true. And that's exactly what we've been, meet them where the needs are.
No. I get your point. It's a very good point for the word you say.
I've actually had someone work under me who was doing that job.
Yeah.
And I tell you, it's crazy what... how long it takes, and how much you have to, and what's, like she said, everything has to be to regulation.
Well, yeah.
Now, there is also one factor you need to consider. When you are doing it for profit, like you are the one to do that, even the government, those regulations, they are stringent with those.
Yes.
But if this is being done as an owner,
not for profit basis,
non-profit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, even the government itself will facilitate those. Sometimes, even providing
some funding.
So that's something a church can explore. Mm-hmm. You know, to provide those services. I have a scenario here. Frida is an immigrant mother of three teenage children who has been suffering at the hands of an abusive husband, and recently received a divorce. She works part-time and makes just enough money to take care of basic expenses. She needs to find a place for herself and children to live where they can make a new start in life. She is worried about having to take care of the children by herself, but feels she has no other choice. Frida lives in your community but has never heard about your church. What can your church do to make a difference in this family's life? So that's the question. What can your church do to make a difference in the family's life? So what are some of the base, given what this family has gone through or is going through or facing right now, what are some things... As said there, she's in your community, but she hasn't heard about your church. So
somebody would have to know Frida from the church and bring the situation to the church, and then the church could set up a program or set up something to contact her. Because the church is made up of individuals, and sometimes when they use the broad term, church, you know, we might think that, okay, well, things just happen like that. Mm-hmm. But usually it happens with individuals.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
So if I know her and know that she needs assistance, and many times people come to the church and they are like a refugee or other situations that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know that unless you make a personal acquaintance with an individual. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest that, that we get to find out.
You need some?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yes, everything is good.
I would suggest that we get to know who we're living in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And when we know the needs of that family, then we could bring it to the church. And yes, the church can from there take it up, can help more the family.
Okay. That's a very good point. Someone needs to know and bring it to the church. Now, can you think of a way that as a church we can make ourselves known out there so that Frida can eventually hear about our church or know about the church? What are some of the things you think?
A basket of food or a box of food.
But you may not even know that she exists.
Knocking on doors is one way of knowing that. And if you go to the community with an evangelistic drive program,
right,
and get to meet people on a one-to-one basis, that's one way that we can know people in the community.
Well, there are a few other ways that we make ourselves known.
Mm-hmm.
Our pastor used to attend what is called the pastors from different churches, in the city, they would have like one breakfast, maybe once a month or every 2 months, where they share that. Right. And what we offer, we make it known to like the police, the other places. So we have the other places. We have a community center of some sort where mm-hmm. we provide clothing, mm-hmm. Furniture, and all those things. We have got that, mm-hmm. and we make sure that that is known. Like places where people in need, resettlement agencies, YWCA, YMCA, so all those we have got there. They know that we offer this.
Yep.
And now, in this case, after we have done what we could offer, we can also refer in the same way the other agencies in the community.
Exactly.
Refer to us. We can also
refer.
If we cannot accommodate, we cannot accommodate them.
Right.
We know YWCA has got a shelter.
So since it says she has never heard about your church, one suggestion I have, as you mentioned, the YMCA, is it YWCA it's called now?
Both.
So I was thinking, are places like those, if a church makes up, you know, a poster, it doesn't have to be too big, it could be this size, it could be larger. But of course you have to meet as a group and plan how you're going to do this outreach. And it's just that you're going to make yourself known out there. So you come up with a plan of making this poster, what services, what needs or what services you're going to provide. And then you contact the YW or YMCA, whichever the outlet is, the immigrant serving agencies, and ask their permission to put this. Because just think of the places that you know immigrants will go, right? Where they frequent, where they go and learn swimming, where they may go, you know, at a gym, public places, and get these out there. And you never know. This person might go to one of these places and say, oh, there's a church here that offers such and such, and I'm in need of that. And right away, that person would know about your church.
In our community, we have a food bank,
mm-hmm.
and a clothing center, and if people donate any furniture, it's given to those in need.
Mm-hmm.
But in our community, various churches in the whole community work at the food bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if these other groups that we go to churches, there's more opportunity to get acquainted with different people in the community.
Yes.
That they can be notified.
Networking mm-hmm. it's a big thing. Yeah, thank you for your input. Okay, how can we learn from each other? We learn from each other by listening to each other and discovering things about each other. So, by learning from each other and discovering things, by listening to each other and discovering things, listening is a very key component of building relationship, communication. So a person can be talking to you, and if they can say, you know, this is where I'm from, this is what I do, this is what I believe, or whatever. But if if I'm not listening, then it won't make much of a difference. We start relationships and then ask, how can we learn from one another? What can we teach each other about what it means to be a Canadian and what it means to live in a peaceful and just community? So by starting a relationship, just getting, you know, introducing yourself, you may be saying, make it simple to start. You know, you found out that this person lives in the community, maybe a block from you, a few blocks or whatever, and it's just introducing yourself and letting them know that you like to welcome them into the community, give them maybe a bowl of fruit or whatever. And most likely when you approach people in such a nice, kind manner, they respond in kind and say, oh, coming in, step in, whatever. It gives you an opportunity to expand a bit more on who you are and whatever. And who knows, you might exchange contact numbers or email or whatever, and the relationship develops from there. Once the relationship gets, you see that, okay, that person is comfortable with you, vice versa, then it's easier to approach on the spiritual level instead of... Okay. Learning becomes more about listening to one another's stories, building relationships, and then letting those relationships direct the development of programs. So, before developing the programs, of course, you need to know what the needs are out there, and develop the relationship, and it's easier to invite people to a program. Quote, and this is by a church leader, I think as Christian people, we need to be on the front end of showing people that we can set aside our differences and learn, you know, adopt a posture of humility and learn to learn from each other. It's easy to just go by assumptions, or like we hear, you know, this being said about a certain person or certain people, and just go by that. But if we learn to know, like learn about a culture, what are their likes? There's so many things to get to learn in different cultures. Some cultures, a woman can't shake a man's hand. Hugging as a greeting is a no-no, you know, certain things like that. So it's good if we know what the different things are, it makes it easier. Yeah, it makes it easier to communicate. According to Matthew Bailey, Dick, and Nelson Chang, the authors of this project that I researched for this presentation, they say, vision is the motivation that provides direction for us as churches to get involved in supporting immigrant settlement and integration. So vision is the motivation. There is a saying, without vision, the people perish. So we can have our church, a fancy building, and we come week after week, but if we don't have a vision to reach out to the people around us, we don't want our churches to perish. Two major motivating factors for churches: a biblical and theological mandate to welcome the stranger, Leviticus 19:33-34, where it says that if a stranger sojourns with you in your land, that you should, you know, treat them well. So that should be a motivating factor for people around. Number two, a desire to connect to people's common humanity. That should be a motivating factor. If we take the humanity out of ministry, of reaching to people, what's left? Nothing. So what is the motivational initiatives? Evangelism, church revitalization, increasing the engagement of participants. So evangelism, like what we discussed, it's all part of evangelism. It comes, you don't have to go and preach from a pulpit, right? You're doing a ministry, it's evangelizing. Church revitalization. There's many churches that it has a very small congregation who knows, by reaching out in a community where they're newcomers, and if we approach our ministry right, they end up joining the church, and they come with gifts and talents and skill sets that can get the church revitalized. So that's an initiative. Increasing the engagement of participants. It's so easy to have people fall through the cracks. They come to the church, they may come week after week, month after month, and they may be people with really good talents and skills, and they're not being utilized, we're not engaging them in any way. Eventually, what happens? Yeah, they just feel, well, you know, I play the organ, but, you know, I don't sing, or I do whatever, I have this skill, I have this talent. So unless we engage the people in our churches and have them participate in some way, we won't really know what gifts or talents they have and how that can impact our churches. So I have some listing here of actions that were taken by other churches. Consider offering sanctuary. Consider offering sanctuary. As I said, today I'm going to be sharing what some of the programs that other churches have used in ministering to immigrants and refugees. So what is your understanding of consider offering sanctuary?
There have been cases like last one I can remember when I had two students of Nigerian origin who were in Saskatchewan. They came time where the government wanted to deport them. So they went into a church. And so they camped in that church for months. I don't know what was the outcome of it. Our government is still kind of understanding. They understand this, like they don't have just to barge in here and get these people kicking and doing this and pull them out. Like if they have taken refuge in
the church
of worship, usually the government won't force them out. So in this case, I guess it's the church accepting that they are willing to stand up to the government saying that they have moved in here,
yeah. So
you don't have to touch them.
The
churches that have gone to extreme, mm-hmm. One case I can remember was the Mormon church in Nigeria. They moved the temple from Nigeria because the government went in there, I think there were some criminals that had run into that church.
Oh.
How it is with the Mormon, their temple not there, mm-hmm. Supposed to go in there. So law officers or whoever they followed these people in there,
mm-hmm.
The Mormon church moved to the temple in Nigeria. So they went for years, they didn't have a temple.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just now the process is doing that back.
You're right. He is right on. As a matter of fact, I was going to read quote here, and your reference is part of this. So really, offering sanctuary is if church congregations are willing in cases of deportation of certain immigrants, if they're willing to have them stay in their churches. And I guess this is just, again, one way in which some churches, they decide to reach out. So I'm reading here from the same project. They did this as a survey, and they also did their research. Welcome. They did their research, And they found that more than 50 times in the last 30 years, Canadian churches have decided to offer sanctuary to refugees facing deportation. For example, a church in Regina opened its doors to two Nigerian university students who were facing deportation. A Russian man lived in a Vancouver church for 3 years while his deportation orders were being reviewed. A church building in Montreal became a temporary home for both a Colombian family and an Ethiopian family before they were finally granted Canadian citizenship. And so there are churches that do it. Not every church think that they can do that, and nobody is saying that. But this is one way of some churches think that they can, hey, we're offering sanctuary. It's a controversial thing, and so of course everybody would have to come in agreement before doing that. Another you can do is host an intercultural workshop. And the intercultural workshop is where, for instance, that's offered the agency. It's teaching Canadian culture to immigrants and immigrants learning Canadian culture so that it goes both ways. And that has been working really well. Create your own program, such as providing personal development programs like English as a second language, social clubs, you can host programs. Meeting immediate settlement relief needs, example, food, clothing, housing, and we talked a lot about that already. Providing community development programs like job development, healthcare. Some of these would take more, of course, big planning and everything like that. But these are ideas that some churches have, these are programs that some churches have, you know, taken under their wings and developed and provided. Advocating for systemic change. So if what's going on in your community regarding immigrants, refugees, etc., is not something that you like to see continue happening, you can maybe talk with your meet with your MP. A lot of times they're willing to listen, to work with you, so as to see how you can get change in the system. Holding activities to meet spiritual needs. Example, newcomer-focused worship, prayer meetings. In our session earlier today, there was one person who said that she wished she had attended a seminar like this before now, because they had a certain group of immigrants that have been attending their church. And of course, English is their second language. But a lot of times, you know, we're in a comfort zone and we just assume, okay, these folk, they're here, they're working, so that means they must, English must be okay. And as far as she said, whatever services, whatever they did in their service, everything was just straight on. And these folk, they basically were lost as to comprehending what was happening. So then they notice that after a while they haven't been attending, except for maybe two of them. So, and she now, she's feeling so badly, she said, you know, now it's foresight, you know, it's looking back now and seeing that this is where we slipped up. But then again, it happens to the best of us if we're not, you don't really know that that's the impact. It's been happening. So we gave tips and all of that stuff in way. It's not too late. They're still there in the community. It's a matter of, so one suggestion I made is, okay, check your after every Sabbath. And I'll advise every church, make sure you have a guest book, a signing book at the entrance, and people greeting people to come in. Once Sabbath is done, whether it's the clerk, the church clerk, or whoever assigns someone to go through that registry, that sign-in book, and contact every person that signed that book that day. Most people would put their addresses, even if they just put the city. You, with the internet now, you can find postal codes, whatever. They won't put their phone number, whatever. But I would encourage every church to have in place specially made thank you cards. Thank you cards with the church stamp, address, phone number, everything, contact person. So that once you have gone through your guest book, it's a matter of getting those cards signed out and let them know how you appreciate them visiting your church. If you were to do that, the next time, say it's someone visiting from out of town, if they were to come back in your community, which church do you think they would choose to go? Exactly. And I'll give you an experience we had. A few years ago when our daughter, my eldest daughter, was getting graduating in Southern University, Tennessee, we went for the graduation and we said, you know, well, we are down south, the Southern United States, and I've heard so much about the South I'd like to see, so we decide. So she being there for 2.5 years, she said, oh, this city is just an hour drive. This one is just an hour and a half. So we rented a car and, you know, we were going to enjoy. So I've heard about Oakwood. I've never been there. And it was such a great thing, you know, we got there. So that's in Alabama. So on our way back now in Atlanta, that Sabbath, we had some friends there and they said, we want you to come with us to our church, the church that we're going. It's a big congregation. They must have been like 600 to 700 people. It's a huge church, very dynamic everything. Had a wonderful time. And so we left, came back to Canada, and about 2 weeks later, what do you think came in the mail? A thank you card from that church that we visited. And it took us by surprise, because I know, yes, we put our address in coming from Canada, but that meant they had something in place that they go through the guest sign-in book and they contact. And so we contacted our friend, who she used to live in Canada, they're now living there, and I said, we are so impressed with your church. We got a thank you card from them for visiting and fellowshipping with them and stuff like that. And she said, yeah, they do that. So I'll encourage, that's one ministry. And you'll be amazed. So if we were to go back to Atlanta, which church you think we'd be inclined to go? Not because we want another thank you card, but it's because they made us felt that our presence there was welcome and appreciated. So that's one thing you can adapt in your church. Talk to your pastor. Say, you know, what do we do with our sign-in guest book? Yes, I know in a lot of churches they go up front and then they thank the visitors for coming and whatever. And that's good, but it can go further. Now, what can happen is, after sending a thank you card, say I wasn't a Seventh-day Adventist, but I was just there visiting with a Seventh-day Adventist friend, it made it easier for them to send, spiritual literature, right? Because they first sent me a thank you card. So it was quite an impressive thing. For us. Meeting immediate settlement needs, we did that. And newcomer focus worship, prayer meetings. So churches can gear their focus worship to meet the needs of those. One of the suggestions we gave was if you have newcomers in your congregation that you see they're not quite, they won't because English isn't their first language, maybe another thing that can be considered is find people who are willing to be translators or interpreters during the service. The pastor here made a suggestion to some churches have
transmitters,
yeah, in different languages, which I think is a great thing, that if it's made known, maybe they can announce in the church for those who speak such and such a language, we have this and this available. There's so many things we can do to make people feel so that they get the service. It's in their language. Sponsor a refugee family. We did that throughout the week, but that's one that that the churches did. Write a formal statement to work with newcomers. So a formal statement is in the sense of a mission statement. Most organizations have a mission statement. I think just about all now, everyone try to have a mission statement. So you can check with your pastor and say, do we have a mission statement for our church? And if we do, does it include a vision to work with recent immigrants or refugees that come into our community? If there isn't a part, if the mission statement that has that, then they can think of make plans to incorporate that into their mission statement. The authors of this same project, they had a quote, they said, "Our churches can work toward proactively discovering and addressing newcomer needs instead of reacting to needs of newcomers in the community." So instead of us, okay, those are the needs, but you know, it's putting quite a demand on us, or a demand on our members, instead of, we can look at it another way, being proactive in discovering and helping. And a church leader said this, "In established Canadian churches, there's still very much a way of thinking that says, well, our doors are open if immigrants and refugees want to come. I don't think there is a profound understanding," he said, "yet that welcoming strangers means being changed ourselves." So basically what he's saying, it starts with, if we're going to be doing ministry, the change should start with us wanting to change the way we do things. Change the way we do things. So any questions? I have a video, a short video that to show you. And before we go there and wrap things up, if you have any questions or comments to share additionally to others here, you can do that, and then I'll show a video that can give a bit more insight of things that we can do.
Maybe just a quick question. If you could expand on advocating for systemic change.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking change like in just our system as a church, or advocating for systemic change, societal changes, like regarding even advocating even
towards
the government?
So societal change, as I say, you know, check with the community, like, is there any established resources or whatever in the society that would be welcoming and inclusive for immigrants and newcomers? If there isn't, then one person can make a difference, right? You can say, okay, I think I'll meet with the mayor or meet with my MP and discuss, you know, like, we have an increase in immigrants coming in here in our community, but there really isn't anything or much in place. Is there a way that we can, some things we can do to bring changes? So
With the thing, you know,
concerned with that. It's kind of, we are doing it haphazardly if we're doing it that. Like, let's say I'm in Lethbridge, I go see the MP or the MLA and try to advocate for this, and the pastor in Edmonton might be doing this, or any other members. Isn't it time for us to come by the default of, we cannot talk about the entire society, but as many us as the church, so our church, maybe as a church advocating for certain things, like this, there are certain things that we, from my experience, from my observation, that has been a major hurdle in the life of newcomers in this country. This is at the level of the certificate and the equivalency and all those kind of things.
Right.
There are certain things that the government says, there's this, of course, if you are dealing with professional bodies, like you are a doctor, you move to this, so there's nothing the government of Canada can do as of today. You have to be dealing with the body that governs and that practice, you doctors.
Right, and we discussed, like earlier on, we discussed what people, professional people, like accreditation and having credentials assessed and all of that, we dealt with that.
Yeah, and I think that even for future consideration, that should be, if we can advocate for that, I know for sure that that is something that can make an impact. We talked about even how about the population, how come we always stay there? People moved here because Canada was greener pastures from wherever they were. And when people are here, there's greener pastures somewhere down the state. So, and that includes both the Canadian, Indian born,
right,
and even some of the immigrants, there's that.
Right.
So, if we don't set up standards that will facilitate the inclusion of this professional that we recruits, and not recruiting as in terms of work, like we get in this country, and then we can't use them. As one instance, there was on one day, on the two items on the news. One, there was a conference in Montreal of 250 doctors, foreign educated doctors, that were just meeting, and they couldn't practice here in this. And the item following that was Canada complaining about shortage of doctors. So some of those things there, how can this be?
Yeah.
You know, I do understand. Anyway, maybe we don't have time.
Yeah.
I think it should be things.
We covered those a couple of days ago,
yeah,
with the professionals, and yes, it's frustrating for professional people, but then, you know, when you're in a country, the country has its rules and regulations and laws and whatever, and it could be frustrating, but it's a matter of thinking, and eventually a lot of the professional people are getting there. They realize, yes, they came with the qualifications, but this is a new country. And sometimes they just have to do upgrading, sit a few more exams, take a few more courses. And so we did talk about that a few days ago. And the government is trying its best, and they put in things in place. Like everything thing takes time. I have a motto when I came to Canada, you take what you get until you get what you want. Yeah, you take what you get until you get what you want. So I gave my experience already yesterday. So a lot of times I think we just have to be patient and move along.
But on that, we'll be too generous.
I think that we mentioned limit the time because today is Friday.
Yes.
We need to go for
yes, and we have a video.
Okay.
for sure.
I hold my question. Let's go to the video.
Okay.
No, it's okay.
If it's a short question, the video is about, what, 6 minutes? Okay. All right, so we're going to go to the video. And brother, so I need my, oh no, I just press this and then it should go. Yeah, it's all set up. And put the speaker on, yeah.
About the approaches that have been working for us in our efforts to better serve and better engage our immigrant residents, with the idea being that each of these approaches has a parallel in the world of civic tech that could help in the development of inclusive tools. So Somerville is a city that has a long history of being welcoming to immigrants. More than a third of our population right now speaks a language other than English at home. More than half of our public school students have a first language other than English. And when we throw a festival like the Haiti Meets Brazil Festival, all manner of Somervillians are likely to turn out and, oops, can I go back to the last slide? And dance in the streets unabashedly like they were doing at this festival here. So at the same time, our mayor, Joseph Curtatone, has really instilled at Somerville City Hall a real commitment to meaningful civic engagement initiatives. And we've had a lot of success in this area. But one area that we've struggled, like a lot of other cities, is in achieving representative participation and access to services by our immigrant residents. So Mayor Curtatone tasked us with figuring out how to turn this around. And 14 months ago, we launched our Summer Viva immigrant outreach program. And while we still have a lot of work to do, we have made significant progress in a really short amount of time. We've gone from, say, public meetings where you might get 100 people attending, and out of them, at best, you might get 1, 2, or 3 immigrants participating, sometimes none, to, for example, a recent meeting that Summer Viva held in Portuguese and advertised in Portuguese, and more than 200 people showed up for that meeting. All of them were members of our local Brazilian immigrant community. We've also seen this program driving up access to important programs and services like our affordable housing program, and we've proven that we can use it to drive up participation in important and intensive public processes like our community budgeting initiative, which last year drew more than a third of its participants from our immigrant communities. So there are about 6 main approaches that have helped us make this initial progress. And the first one is building trust. And in this setting, trust starts with familiarity. So the first thing that we did is we hired language liaisons, this is 2 of them, to carry out this program. Each of them is themselves an immigrant. Each is a native language speaker of either Spanish, Portuguese, or Haitian Creole, the 3 most common languages in Somerville after English. And really importantly, each can provide cultural insight and cultural appropriateness to all of our efforts, and that builds trust. So the next approach is, everybody in this room understands this, be evidence-based. So to guide this program, we went straight to the constituents that we need to serve, and we asked them about their ideas, their needs, their concerns, and most importantly, how they wanted us to communicate with them in the future, and what we could do to make their access to services and their participation easier and more likely in the future. The most important thing that came out of the face-to-face surveying that we did was that our immigrant residents really wanted to see more outreach and more opportunities in their native languages. And so what we've learned from them since then is that while it's helpful to have an interpreter at a public meeting or a Google Translate button on a digital tool or online, that these tools still have practical barriers to full participation and understanding. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, they don't overcome that familiarity barrier. Mm-hmm. So what they've told us is that when they see something that was not machine translated, but that was created by a person who got it right, that they feel more like it's speaking to them. It's an invitation, it's an intention, it's not just an afterthought, and they feel more comfortable responding. And we have seen this work time and again with this program. I cannot emphasize this point more than enough. So the next approach that's been working is go to them. So for Summer Viva, what this means is we take these compact public meetings that we call mobile mini meetings, maybe 15 minutes long. We take them to ESL classes, to community organizations. We take them to churches. The liaisons go wherever the people are. They'll go to cultural festivals, and in the midst of all the hubbub, they'll gather feedback on a public policy. And this has been working for us as well. And your civic tech parallel to this might be choosing the right device or mode of communication, which brings me to number 5, which was really interesting to me. So I was certain that when we went out to survey, that text messaging would be the most requested form of communication, because that has proven very effective for other programs serving immigrants elsewhere. But in our, among our residents, text messaging was near the top, but one of the things that came up ahead of that we didn't expect was to use the spoken word. So our residents really wanted information via radio, on air, or internet radio. They wanted information via city cable TV, and they wanted just person-to-person communication. So that makes text to audio really interesting for us when we're looking at civic technology. And the added benefit of that is that it doesn't leave behind anyone who has a literacy barrier in their native language. And finally, encourage word of mouth. So this has been a really powerful tool for us for this program. And I think that that's because it loops back through the last 5 things that we went over. So when you have somebody that you trust, who understands your needs, who's speaking to you in a language you're comfortable in and can get to you because they're where you are, you're much more likely to get a message and respond positively to it, like, hey, you know, the city really does want to know what we'd like to see in this park before they renovate it, and this is how you can provide feedback. So we've seen these working for us through this program. It's really helping us make progress, but again, we have a lot of work to do, and the hope is that the creative thinking like you, from people like you, is going to help create civic tech that is going to help us along our way. So thank you.
So that's our short video there, and I hope it would serve as a good addition to ideas and other things that, as members of your church, that you can do. Just thought I'll include that. So that brings us to the end of our seminar, and I want to thank you for your support, and I hope that for those of you who have been coming, that you've been helped in some way. All right. Thank you so much.
Given her a gift in the morning.
Yes, yes, they gave me.
So, unfortunately, not all of you were here, but we usually run 2 sessions morning and then the evening, so we gave her a gift in the morning. So, we wish you a happy Sabbath and a blessed community.
Yes.
We hope to see you again next year.
Yes.
God bless you. Shall we pray before you go?
Yes.
Pastor Doug, would you like to pray for us?
Yes. Father in heaven, we want to thank you for the information that you have made through the movie this week and the insights. And we pray, Lord, that what we read and learn, we will be able to apply to advance your kingdom and to be better witnesses for you. And we just thank you that you have given her this ability within her giftedness. As she continues on with further seminars and giving this information, and bless us as we get ready for this Sabbath community. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen. 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 And just in case you need to keep in touch with her, you have more.